Good evening and welcome to Outbeat Radio. I'm Greg Moralia. Well, tonight we're very proud to bring you the next evolution in programming here at KRCB. Outbeat Now is now officially Outbeat News in Depth. And this new format will bring you 2 to 4 stories each month, including the Outbeat Youth segment, featuring the people, events, and information making LGBT headlines from here in the North Bay and beyond. Now, we're building a team of correspondents from around the country that we hope will bring you a variety of voices and perspectives from our community. Outbeat News in Depth will be closely tied together with our weekly Outbeat News segment, all on our brand new website at outbeatnews.com. Now, you need to check this website out. It features the latest LGBT news headlines updated hourly from around the country, a community calendar, and, of course, on-demand play of all Outbeat News in-depth radio shows. It's your source for LGBT news from here in the North Bay and beyond. So, tonight we have some incredible guests, including Jashauna Wally from the National Black Justice Coalition. She's here to talk about Black History Month in February and some of the challenges facing LGBT African Americans. And then we have more from a story we've been following about the Boy Scouts organization and their discrimination. Last week, a young man named Derek Nance, a Scout Camp program director, posted a YouTube video coming out to the world and advocating for change in the Boy Scouts. He'll be here to tell us more about his experience and what inspired him to come out so publicly. And on tonight's Outbeat Youth segment, we have live in our studio members of the Maria Carrillo High School Gay Straight Alliance, who will be here to talk about the work they're doing to make their campus a safe place for all. All of that is coming up right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, January 27th, 2013. Last Sunday, President Barack Obama made history after being sworn in for a second term and delivering an unprecedented LGBT-inclusive speech. Meet our new Washington, D.C. correspondent, Ryan Olson, who was there to hear these historic words.
At a moment when our nation's history afforded us a modicum of change, the 2013 inauguration of President Barack Obama to a second term ushered in a new era for progressive politics in the United States. Over a million people gathered in Washington, D.C. to observe the re-inauguration of President Obama. The streets were crowded with a rich diversity that can only be found within the United States. People had come from all over and truly embodied the great spirit that unites this nation. While pomp and stance of President Obama's inauguration was a spectacle to see, everything from the singers, poets, and faith leaders at the actual ceremony, to the traditional parade that followed, or the countless inaugural balls that took place throughout D.C., nothing compared to President Obama's speech, which not only included for the first time in history the mention of gays and lesbians and their families, but also mentioned and addressed climate change, economic disenfranchisement, and a plethora of other issues that not only are deserving of the nation and world's attention, but also reflect on the greater impact that these issues and other issues have on the greater American society.
The sick, the marginalized, the victims of prejudice, not out of mere charity, but because peace in our time requires the constant advance of those principles that our common creed describes: tolerance and opportunity, human dignity and justice. We, the people, declare today that the most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that guides us still, just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall, just as it guided all those men and women, sung and unsung, who left footprints along this great mall, to hear a preacher say that we cannot walk alone, to hear a king proclaim that our individual freedom is inextricably bound to the freedom of every soul on earth. It is now our generation's task to carry on what those pioneers began. For our journey is not complete until our wives, our mothers, and daughters can earn a living equal to their efforts. Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well. Our journey is not complete until no citizen is forced to wait for hours to exercise the right to vote. Our journey is not complete until we find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as a land of opportunity. Until bright young students and engineers are enlisted in our workforce rather than expelled from our country.
Obama ultimately reminded us of our collective hopes and bonds that will inevitably lead us forward as a nation. He reminded us of our core values, particularly the pursuit of happiness.
We recall that what binds this nation together is not the colors of our skin, or the tenets of our faith, or the origins of our names. What makes us exceptional, what makes us American, is our allegiance to an idea articulated in a declaration made more than two centuries ago. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Obama encouraged our country to come together and to transcend our differences to recognize the greater abilities we have to make the world a better place. It is my hope that young people across these great states come to recognize our greater connections to one another, that no matter how alone you may feel, you are never truly alone, that we are all connected in deep and intimate ways, and that it becomes our responsibility to look out for one another, to grow together, and to ensure that in our daily lives we are taking into consideration who it is we are and what it is we are creating. For LGBTQ youth, an important takeaway from President Obama's speech was a recognition that we all make up the American fabric, that we all have contributions to make to the society, and that we all belong here. This is all our home. When we say Americans, we mean all Americans, no matter your race, your gender presentation, your physical sex and ability, your sexual orientation, your socioeconomic status, your religion, your faith, your country of origin, and the list goes on and on. President Obama's speech truly pushed us forward into a new era where, as a citizenry, we can no longer stand by and let someone else make key decisions regarding the most intimate details of our lives. He articulated that as Americans, we must take ownership of our country and stand together to improve our everyday lives. This is our era to create the change we want to see in the world, and it is our responsibility and ours alone to take advantage of this moment in our nation's history to pave way for the citizens of tomorrow.
You and I, as citizens, have the obligation to shape the debates of our time, not only with the votes we cast, but with the voices we lift in defense of our most ancient values and enduring ideals. Let us, each of us now, embrace with solemn duty and awesome joy what is our lasting birthright. With common effort and common purpose, with passion and dedication, let us answer the call of history and carry into an uncertain future that precious light of freedom. Thank you. God bless you. And may He forever bless these United States of America.
This has been your Outbeat Radio Washington, D.C.'s correspondent, Ryan Ubuntu-Olson, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ryan. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, January 28th, and every Monday at 5:30 p.m., the Petaluma Health Center hosts an LGBT support group at 1179 North McDowell Boulevard in Petaluma. And also on Monday from 5 to 7 p.m., the Marin AIDS Project will host a men's mixer at the Four Point Sheraton, 1010 Northgate Drive in San Rafael. And again on Monday at 7 p.m., PFLAG Sonoma County will meet at the Knox Presbyterian Church, 1650 West 3rd in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, January 29th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street. And on Wednesday, January 30th, from 5 to 6:30 p.m., the Youth Support Group will meet at the Spectrum LGBT Center, 30 North San Pedro Road in San Rafael. And on Saturday, February 2nd, from 7 to 11 p.m., the Russian River Sisters and the Laguna de Santa Rosa Foundation will host Mardi Gras Casino Night at the Laguna Environmental Center, 900 Sanford Road in Occidental. This is a benefit for the center's education program and the Sisters Community Fund. And finally, a save the date Food for Thought, Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, will host a Celebrate for the Oscars, a viewing party of the Academy Awards at the Rialto Cinemas, Sebastopol, on Sunday, February 24th. A VIP pre-broadcast champagne reception starts at 3:30 p.m. and will be catered by Cottonwood Catering. VIPs also receive a complimentary red carpet limo photo. Broadcast starts at 5 p.m. with 30 minutes of pre-show highlights in the theater. VIP tickets are $40 and available at the Food for Thought website, fftfoodbank.org. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our new website at outbeatnews.com. And stay connected with us during the week on Facebook and Twitter for all the latest LGBT news and information from the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Say it. Our first guest on this premiere edition of Outbeat News in Depth is part of this year's Campus Pride National Voices in Action Spotlight Series. Jashana Wally is the Program and Outreach Associate for the National Black Justice Coalition and is with us tonight to talk about her work and to share some thoughts about this year's Black History Month. Jashana, welcome to Outbeat Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it is great to have you here with us tonight. We appreciate the time. Could you start out by talking a little bit about the National Black Justice Coalition and the kind of work you're doing?
Sure. So the National Black Justice Coalition is a nonprofit organization located here in D.C. We are actually a civil rights organization dedicated to empowering Black, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals. We advocate for policy for this community, for affirming policy for this community. Overall, our mission is to eradicate racism and homophobia, which is a pretty broad mission, but it allows us to move pretty fluidly as we work to make sure that the Black LGBT community is the best that it can be and has all of the opportunities afforded to it.
So how did you get involved? I mean, what inspires you to do this kind of work?
It's actually a really interesting story. So I'm a recent graduate of Spelman College, which is a historically Black college in Atlanta. I graduated in May of 2011. And when I was on Spelman's campus, I got really involved with this student LGBT group, Afrikiti. Afrikiti was a wonderful space for me to just develop into the type of leader that I wanted to be. But it's in that space where I came in contact with LGBT activism. So as I started to do a lot of organizing on campus and in the greater Atlanta area, I started to look for other resources outside of Georgia and came across HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, and NBJC. And both of the organizations actually came together and they created this program to send Black students from historically Black colleges to the White House to see President Obama during a reception that he was hosting when he proclaimed June the month of Pride. So I was actually one of the students that was selected to go to this program. And ever since then, I found myself literally in the same spaces as Sharon, our CEO and executive director. And it was almost like serendipitous. Without trying, without really looking for her or her looking for me or she looking for me, I literally was just in the same spaces. So if she was a keynote at one of the Pride events, I was actually speaking on the panel. Or when Spelman hosted our Audre Lorde Summit, you know, I was the student researcher for the summit and she was one of the panelists. Like, so she had an opportunity to really see me work. And when I graduated, she approached me and said, you know, if you're interested in working, like continuing to do this work, send me your resume. And I stayed in contact with her, and I actually came to Out on the Hill one day just to volunteer because I just wanted to be in the space, but I couldn't afford the registration. So I wanted to volunteer, and it's at that time when she approached me about a fellowship. So I actually started my fellowship last January, and it was supposed to be a six-month fellowship, and the fellowship actually turned into a permanent staff position. So I went from a senior fellow to now the programs and outreach associate.
Sounds like a bit of destiny to me. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. February is Black History Month. Tell us about some of the LGBT African Americans who've inspired you.
You know, I've been really blessed to have, like, direct contact with some amazing Black queer people. I really feel like my activism and my engagement and just connection with me, with myself as a Black queer woman, started in Atlanta. Atlanta has this very powerful, beautiful, like, kinetic energy and community when it comes to, like, just even the poetry scene, or, you know, this intentional community scene, or the political activist scene, the social activist scene, the academic scene. Like, there are a lot of powerful Black men and women there that just really will forever stay with me, that identify in all from on all gamuts of the spectrum. So I appreciate the fact that I was able to be in that space and really be nurtured in a real way. And then when I think about all the way back to high school, like, I've always been surrounded by queer people and just didn't know it. Like, my mentor, you know, at the time is this woman who's in her 60s, who has been with her partner for 20 or so years, and is a top ranking official in the military. And I can only imagine, like, DADT only just passed, you know, so I can only imagine what her experience was like. But I've never... And she's always been private, so she's never, like, necessarily came out and told me that she was lesbian, but she didn't have to, because she never hid her love either. So from a very young age, I was always exposed to the opportunity, I mean, to the fact that Black women can love each other and have healthy, successful relationships and still be very successful contributors to society. So when I think about, like, the exposure that I've had, I've always been surrounded by beautiful Black queer people who, in my mind, are making history as I know it, like, right before my eyes. And then just, like, historically knowing about Audre Lorde, Toni Cade, Byron Rustin, these iconic people that have molded my thought process and provided the language of activism and community organizing. Yeah, I've had the opportunity to really be exposed to some phenomenal people, and I'm being exposed to phenomenal people every day, just being in this space and the work that I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that's really important about events like Black History Month, is that it really gives you a chance to take a look at some of the people who have been left out of the history books, like you mentioned Bayard Rustin. If you look back, number one, it's rare that you would probably find much about him in the history book, but also the fact that he happened to be a gay man. So tell us where people can go to learn more about the National Black Justice Coalition.
Well, you can visit our website, www.nbjc.org. We're also on Facebook. You can look us up at the National Black Justice Coalition. And you can follow us on Twitter at NBJC on the move. And we also have a YouTube page, so you can look us up on YouTube as well.
Great. We've been talking with Jashauna Wally from the National Black Justice Coalition. Jashauna, thanks so much for joining us tonight on Outbeat Radio.
Thank you for having me.
We have the full unedited interview with Jashauna and links to the National Black Justice Coalition on our website at outbeatnews.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page. Last week, Derek Nance, a former Boy Scout camp program director and a gay man, spoke out on YouTube. He started his video with a deep breath and then shared his story of how he kept hidden his sexuality from the organization he loved, both as a participant and most recently as a scout camp program director. His video caught the attention of many, including The Advocate magazine and Huffington Post. And with us tonight to share more about his story is Derek Nance. Welcome to Outbeat Radio.
It's a pleasure to be here, Greg.
Well, it's fantastic to have you. Start out by telling us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and how you first got involved with scouting.
So I grew up in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I got involved with scouting kind of late in the game compared to most people. I didn't really start until towards my fourth grade year when I got involved with the last part of the Cub Scout program, which is called We Blows. And so I did that for a year, and then I bridged into the Boy Scout troop at our local church, and I was with them all the way through high school. every troop kind of has their own thing that they kind of do really well. And our troop was big into camping and big into bike riding and that kind of stuff. And so that's what I spend a lot of my time doing all the way up through high school.
So you really got a taste for the joys of camping.
Oh, yes. Our troop went camping every month.
So did you earn your Eagle Scout Award?
I did.
So tell us about the project that you did.
So there's a place in Las Vegas called Opportunity Village, and it helps mentally disabled people find work. And part of their big fundraiser every year is something called the Magical Forest, which is this big pine tree forest out behind their facility. And they decorated it all up with Christmas trees, and companies from all over the town buy Christmas trees that they can decorate. And there's a train that runs through this forest, and part of my project was laying railroad track for that train that runs through the forest. It's an 18-inch gauge track for those who've messed with that before. And so it was a lot of fun. It was something different than what most of the scouts in my troop had done. So it was something cool for everyone to try.
Wow. And so what was the reaction of that community then around that project?
Well, the Magical Forest is a really big event in Las Vegas, and people from all over the community get really involved with it every year. And so I was just one small drop in the bucket to everything that was happening with that project.
Yeah. You know, I think that's one of the most important things about the whole Eagle Scout process is that giving back and that community improvement. That's such an important thing for everybody. I don't care who you are, you know, to have that sense of contributing to your community and not just being sort of self-centered on yourself, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Plus, it's just a lot of fun to come together and to build a big project like that. I remember working on my friends building planter boxes and putting patios at schools and all kinds of amazing projects that we did all over town.
Yeah, good for you. So tell us about when you first came out and how that went for you.
I kind of came out later than a lot of my friends. I didn't come out till my sophomore year of college, even though I went to a very accepting performing arts school for high school. I didn't choose to come out until I was actually in college, and I came out my sophomore year of college to some of my Res Life friends. I work as an RA on campus all the way through my undergrad, and so...
Now, where did you go to school?
The University of Nevada, Reno.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And had you come out to anybody in the scouting organization at that time?
No, I hadn't, actually. The first time I ever came out to somebody in the scouting organization was actually my best friend. It was towards the end of the, I think it was 2007. They all kind of, the years just kind of blend together after a while at camp. But I think it was 2007 was when we were starting to scheme about how we could get into the program director spot at camp and how we could start actually getting into camp management. And towards the end of that summer is when I finally came out to David and told him, like, I had to have somebody at camp who knew. And I remember his exact words to me was, well, that explains a lot. And then he didn't even skip a beat and just moved on. And it was awesome at that point. And he was the only one who knew for years at camp.
That's great. And so you never had any worries about anybody else finding out, or?
Oh, that concern was always in the back of my mind. As I kept working at camp, I started recruiting more and more friends from school here at Reno to come down to San Diego to work at camp. And I'd been able to, for years, keep my two lives very separate just geographically because, you know, Reno's 400 miles from San Diego, so I didn't have to worry too much about that bleed over. So whenever I would recruit friends from school to come work at camp, I always had to have a conversation with them about how Derek at camp was straight Derek and, you know, not to make jokes about it while we were at camp. And so that was always an awkward conversation I always had to have whenever I recruited somebody.
Sure. So tell us about your role as a scout camp leader now.
So quickie lesson in Boy Scout camps for those who don't know. So the camp is run by someone called a camp director, and then underneath the camp director, there are three key positions. You have the program director, the business manager, and the commissioner. And so the commissioner works with the adults that come to camp, the leaders that come with the scouts, and then the business manager does all the dining hall and trading posts and that sort of stuff. And then the program director is the one in charge of everything the scouts do in camp. And so we typically had about 300 to 400 scouts in camp on any given week. When I finally made it up to the program director spot, I did that for 2 summers. So when I finally made it up to the program director spot, I was in charge of a staff of 50, running programs all over our valley and everything you can imagine from just the typical outdoor skills and aquatics and shooting sports all the way up into we had a ropes course at camp and climbing programs. We were near Warner Springs, California. And so we actually once a week would take scouts out to the glider port and take them glider riding and just all kinds of really cool programs that we would do with the scouts out there.
Wow. So, I mean, that's a huge responsibility, both being in charge of all that programming plus all of those participants.
Mm-hmm.
And is the camp organization itself run underneath the Boy Scouts organization, or is that separate?
Yes. Well, each council, so the Boy Scouts is divided up into a bunch of councils. I believe there are 300 and some odd councils in the country. And so each council is its own organization that reports to the Boy Scouts. And so each council owns its own set of camps. The council I work for owns two camps, ours, which is in the mountains, and then another one that's down by the ocean.
Okay. So, you know, obviously last summer there was a lot of press and stories out there about the Boy Scouts organization and their review of their policy, you know, prohibiting gay people from participating in the Scouts. As you heard those stories, how did they impact you, you know, knowing that you were still keeping this secret?
You know, it really started to impress in my brain that I think that I had to make my move at some point, especially the story of Tim Griffin, the scout from Northern California, the camp staff from Northern California that got fired this past summer.
Right.
His really struck a chord with me because Tim's resume and my resume are basically identical. We both started, you know, as instructors in camp and worked our way all the way up to program director. And so, and it was also struck a chord with me because that summer I was also kind of doing a glory lap at camp. Like, I was just working the ropes course. I really had I had already stepped away from the program director spot. I was just doing just hanging out at camp because I was having fun. And Tim was doing the exact same thing last summer when he got fired. And so it really kind of struck a chord with me because his story was very similar to mine. And so that's when I kind of realized that I needed to start seriously considering doing this because I know that there are lots of program directors. And I've had emails from program directors across the country who have told me the same thing, that, you know, they can't talk about it because they are gay, but they like their jobs too much to be able to give that up.
So knowing that risk, what inspired you to make this YouTube video where, you know, not only you came out, but you're advocating for change in the scouting organization?
I made the video specifically for my fellow staff at camp. That's really who I had intended the video for. Since I live up here in Reno, I wanted to come out to them and talk to them, but I couldn't actually be there because I live up here now. And so I figured video is the best medium to do that in. And so that's the main reason I made the video. I tossed in a couple of the lines about the scouting program in general because I have friends that work across the country in different scouting areas, and so I knew that they were going to be seeing the video as well. And so I originally had just posted it up to our Facebook group for the staff, along with a letter of resignation. I had already resigned from camp back in December, and so but I hadn't told very many of the staff yet that I had done so. And so since I was still fresh in everyone's minds and still everyone still knew me and knew what I had done at camp, I figured this was the best time to be able to make the most impact with my friends. And when I posted up on Facebook, not 5 minutes later, one of my friends was like, you know, I bet I could get Dan Savage to tweet this. And like within 10 minutes, Dan Savage had tweeted it. And now 4 days later, it's had 16,000 views. So,
oh, there's no doubt it's really taken off. And of course, this is really,
yeah,
this is really a fresh and really contentious issue in the media right now. You know, in light of the story you mentioned earlier, and then the more recent story this fall with Ryan Anderson from right here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I'm not surprised. It's gotten a lot of exposure on The Advocate and Huffington Post, and that's really, really great. Now, you mentioned that you'd already resigned from the scouting organization.
Mm-hmm.
Had you not done that, what were your expectations of how the scouting organization would have responded once that video sort of went viral?
My intention was never to put my council in a position to have to fire me. I've worked with them way too many years and built too much of a program at camp to jeopardize that by doing this. And so my intention was never to put them in a position to fire me. All of my coworkers down in San Diego have all been very, very supportive of this whole thing. And so I've never had any issue with them at council. And so my issues with the Boy Scout Nationals, who puts councils like ours in the position they're in. And so that was my intention was never to get them to fire me, because I knew that's what would happen if I had not already had resigned.
Yeah, yeah. So talk to those scouts that are out there in the program now. You know, those perhaps some of the Weebelows, but clearly the Boy Scouts and maybe some folks working on their Eagle project right now who are keeping that same secret. What advice do you have for them?
No, I spend a long time thinking about this question. I talked with my friend Ross Armstrong, who made a video a couple years ago about It Gets Better, for the It Gets Better project, about becoming an Eagle Scout and then having to come out. And I think the one thing we really have to we both really agreed on is that we would never encourage anybody to be ashamed of who they are. Our hopes is that those people who hear our stories feel less guilty or conflicted about the fact that they are not revealing their identity in order to take advantage of the opportunities that the Boy Scouts gives. You know, regardless of what's going on around you, I feel like you still need to be confident about who you are in the inside. And all of us in the LGBT community have those moments where, you know, we can't necessarily show who we are on the outside, but we know who we are in the inside. And I think that's the important part. Kind of on a more practical level too, I would encourage those who, you know, are participating in scouting secretly, to find a peer to confide in. I always had one friend at camp who knew, and that was the most comforting thing ever. Like, we never talked about it. We never had to say anything to each other. But, you know, when we got embroiled in conversations at camp about this, you know, it was nice to be able to look over at my friend and our eyes would just lock and we wouldn't even say anything. But we know, like, if only they knew who was running this camp right now. Like, we just kind of had that little moment, like, if only they knew what was really going on here, then I think they'd see the situation differently. And so it was always comforting to have that one other person in camp who knew, just for my own sanity's sake.
Wow.
You know, and if I could add one more thing, because I've been like reading through the YouTube comments, one of the biggest things I noticed in all the comments from all over the different places is everybody's like, Derek's advocating for, you know, scouts that are gay in the Boy Scouts to come out. And that's not really what I had been advocating for in this. I think that this fight is not one for the gay scouts. It's a fight for the straight ones, because those scouts who are in the program and not revealing their identity, they're doing it for a reason. They're in there because they're still taking advantage of the leadership roles and the leadership training that you get from the Boy Scouts. And so this is really a fight for the straight scouts out there to do, because the ones who should be saying something can't because of the way the policies are written. So.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah.
Well, Derek Nance, thank you so much for taking a leadership position and for standing up for what you believe is right and for all of those scouts out there who are still hiding. I think your video is powerful, and I hope that it makes a big difference with the organization.
Thank you. These past few days have just been absolutely surreal. It's been crazy.
Fantastic. Well, you're making a difference, and that's what happens. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You can see Derek's YouTube video on our website at outbeatnews.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the Outbeat Youth segment and members of the Maria Carrillo High School Gay Straight Alliance. Stay with us.
Sitting at the window when I woke up, nothing but a bathrobe and a coffee cup, watching the cars and the clouds move slowly. I was lying in the wrinkles and curves of your sheets, and the sun was caressing your hair and your cheeks, and I feel like I've known you for years and not weeks. And I love everything I see. Come back to bed with me. Come back to bed with me. I know love's waters tend to run dry. Someday we'll have to sail through darker skies. There's always danger in unknown country. But now the night is clear and we can see the stars, and there's no creatures here to tear our hearts apart. And I will be with you, dear, until our lights grow dark. And my love, you're all I need. Come back to bed with me. Ooh, come back to bed with me. Ooh, come back to bed. This is more than the room that we're in. This is more than the touch of our skin. And this is more than just two lungs breathing. This is 10,000 watts down the wire. This is my hand and your soul on fire. And this is the rhythm of our heart's desires. And our bodies dance along to the beat. Come back to bed with me. Ooh. Come back to bed with me. Ooh. Come back to bed. Ooh. Come back to bed with me. Ooh. Come back to bed. Ooh. Come back to bed with me.
That was local singer-songwriter Bobby Joe Valentine with Come Back to Bed from his newest CD, Home. You're listening to Outbeat News In Depth on KRCB Radio. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment.
Please put my soul up to love. I am so, so alive.
And we are thrilled tonight to have with us live in the studio members of the Maria Creel High School Gay Straight Alliance. Trish Terrell, their advisor, is here, and Kaylee Jackson, who's one of the students. And they're going to tell us all about what's going on, all the great things they're doing at Maria Creel. Welcome to Outbeat Radio.
Thank you.
Hi.
Great to have you here. Let's start out by having you each tell us a little bit about yourselves, and specifically, how and why did you get involved with the GSA?
So I teach freshman and senior English at Maria Creel High School. And this is my 7th year at Creel and my 17th year teaching. And the reason why I got involved in GSA is that earlier in my career, I spent a good chunk of years at Newark Memorial High School down in Newark by Fremont. And it was right around the time of the Gwen Araujo murder. And the school put on the Laramie Project, and it got a lot of media attention because of the murder. And Moises Kaufman came down for our opening night, and it was just really emotional and poignant to be part of that and to see what our students kind of were feeling in reaction to the murder and the play, and some kind of religious zealots coming out to try and spoil the evening. And then I came up to Sonoma County to be with my husband, and we needed a GSA at my school. It had kind of floundered for a little bit, and then some students kind of wanted it to come back with a lot more energy and passion. And so it seemed like the right place for me to be.
Now, was Gwen a student at that school?
Not at the time, but a lot of the students knew of her. So it was definitely a community major impact at the time.
Just refresh my memory. What year was she murdered? Somewhere around 2002, I should know that. A transgender young woman who was brutally murdered.
Yeah, by three teenage boys.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Right. Well, what a motivation, you know, to be involved in the GSA here.
Yeah. I mean, I think every student, no matter who they are, how they dress, should have a safe place to be and not have to worry about it. And school should be that place.
Great. Kaylee, how about you?
I'm a freshman at Creel, and I got involved in GSA because I believe in equality, and I read all of these I read all the news and stuff, and how like there's only 9 states that are allowed gay marriage, and I just think that's unfair, and I don't believe, and I'd like to be a part of making it a safer place for the youth.
Good for you. So how's your freshman year been so far?
It's been fun.
Are you liking high school?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, awesome. So how long has the GSA been around at Maria Creel?
So Creel, I think, started in 96, and there was a GSA there kind of off and on for a few years, but me as the advisor has been around for, I think this is our 4th year. So we've been pretty strong for the last 4 years.
And there are gay straight alliances at most of the high schools in Santa Rosa, right?
From what I'm aware of, there are kind of different, you know, varying beginning stages to not quite ready to do a lot of activities kind of. So it just kind of depends on the high school.
And so from both of your perspectives, what impact has the GSA had at the school in terms of helping to shape the environment there?
Well, I think for me as a teacher, the staff is definitely aware that I am kind of the safe place to go if there are students who are LGBTQI. And I think it's raised the level. We've always been a school, since I've been there, where we don't tolerate bullying and slurs, like that's so gay, that kind of thing, or you're a fag. And the teachers follow through and address those issues. But I think it's brought it to a level of, you know, bullying is a big issue. And on a recent survey I did, over half of the staff members have dealt with bullying in some form in their life, whether it's them or they were bullies or they were bullied or, you know, a friend was bullied. So it's a big issue. And I think for teachers and administrators, it's becoming a lot more part of our daily, how do we address this issue and how do we make a difference about it?
So is the GSA one of those prestigious clubs, or, you know, who, I guess another question is, who attends the GSA? Who participates?
We have a lot of straight allies. We do. A lot of the LGBTQI who are out, and just anyone who wants it to make it a better place is there.
So on any given meeting, how many people typically show up?
A big one would be about 25.
You're kidding, 25 members?
Nope.
And how big is the school then? I mean, that seems like a lot of people to come to a gay straight alliance meeting.
I think we're at, I don't know, 1,600, something like that.
Yeah. Wow.
So 25 people at a meeting, and so what's kind of the breakdown of males and female identified and gay and straight, just roughly?
I would say if it was a 25-person meeting, maybe 5 males, 2 or 3 probably gay, and then the rest females, and of the females, maybe 7, 8 lesbian, maybe 2 or 3 bisexual identifying that way.
That's incredible to me that you'd have that many straight allies, or at least people who are identifying as straight right now, that are there and making themselves visible to support the LGBTQ kids. I mean, I think that really says a lot about the school. It's great. It's really, really great.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that there are probably a lot more students out there that would identify as supporters, that maybe it's just not quite, they're not quite there yet to show up to the meetings. So our goal is just to make it as, you know, non-judgmental, open, a positive place to be. So hopefully we'll be able to build up our membership over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know a couple of years ago we had Kayla Kearney, who made, you know, YouTube history when she came out to the whole school. The video went viral. Incidentally, this last week, another young man in New Jersey made a similar to announcement at his high school. How big of a deal is it now for someone to come out at school? Kaylee, I mean, you see it.
It's not that big of a deal. They sort of just ignore it. It you know, oh, cool, you're bi or you're lesbian or you're gay, okay. And then they just leave it at that and just ignore it. Unless it's brought up again.
That's great. You know, we were talking earlier before we went on the air, and I was just remembering my time in high school, which was decades ago, and no one came out. And if you did come out, you just would not have survived. It just would have been ugly. So that's really great to hear. Talk about some of the activities that you have coming up this spring.
Well, the Day of Silence is something that not just the GSA, but a lot of the other sort of similar groups like the Jew Crew or the Latina Club.
Amnesty International.
Amnesty, yeah. And the Puma Peers.
Yeah, So we're all going to participate in the Day of Silence. And typically it's a LGBT day, so that you're silent to show how those particular people are silenced and not able to be themselves. But we're really opening up to bullying and silencing of who you are and what you believe and what you look like happens to a lot of different people. And so campus-wide, we really want to make that in the forefront of everybody's minds on that day.
So you're getting pretty widespread participation from a variety of different groups.
Yeah, we're hoping so.
And so I'm curious, where's the high school administration and your colleagues and teachers, you know, with all of this? Is it just you out there kind of running this whole thing, or do you get a lot of support from your staff?
Oh, no, I definitely get a lot of support. In the recent survey that I did of our staff members, 49 staff members responded, and it was interesting to me because I am aware of staff members who are out, but I think a lot of the students and other staff members maybe not be aware. So out of 49 staff members, I believe 5 identified as other than heterosexual, and people have come to me and said, you know, I never had this when I was in high school, and if I had a GSA advisor who was fighting for me and saying, you know, no, you can't say that, or, you know, you have a safe place to be if you need it, my high school would have been a lot different for me. You know, that experience would have been different for me. So I think that there are a lot of people that are out there supporting us. I think that there's also some education probably that needs to happen. And it's not out of maybe, I'm hoping it's not out of a lack of wanting to support, because every teacher wants to support their kids and wants them to be in a safe place. But like, for example, there's the recent legislation, the AB 537, the Fair Education Act. And in my survey, only 11 out of 49 teachers that responded said that they were aware of it. So that's something that tells me, you know, as we're busy as teachers and administrators are busy and we've got all these other pressures, but maybe the GSA can take that on and help educate and get other teachers and the administrators inspired about making it a safe place and an inclusive classroom for everybody on our campus.
So let's just talk about, for our listeners who may not know, about the Fair and Inclusive Education Act. That was a law that was signed into law, or a bill that was signed into law last year. What does it require of public schools?
So it basically requires that in all subjects in all classrooms, that basically anybody, regardless of their background, its race, gender, can you help me out? There's all disabilities. Regardless of your background, that you groups of people and individuals are recognized in history for their contributions. And so, you know, making sure that that comes up. History obviously would be an easy one, but just in all classrooms at all levels, that there's some kind of identification and promotion of that.
Right. And that's important because I think young people need to see themselves, you know, in a variety of role models. Decades ago, history books were filled with stories of all white people, for example. And then, you know, as time went on, we began to tell the stories of all of the people of color who have contributed to our society. But
right.
But many of the folks across the whole spectrum have been LGB or T. And I don't remember reading anything in a high school or college textbook that mentioned that aspect of a person.
Yeah. And I think it's possibly, it's a sticky area, especially if there's, if you haven't been trained in, like, how do you appropriately bring that into a classroom? You know, because does their successes hinge on who they are as people and who they are, you know, as sexual beings? Like, no, but we also want to know, we want everyone who's out there to know, like, there is somebody like me out there who's been places and have had successes. So I think it's kind of a sticky area, and there aren't really easy answers yet.
Right.
And that happens a lot, I think, when you have things like that put into legislation where the...
Right. Where you're sort of being forced.
Yeah, and that there hasn't really been a clear plan of how to make that work in the classroom.
Well, you're right about that, because there is no clear plan, is there?
No.
So I guess the logical question now, too, let's talk about the parents. What kind of support or what kind of pushback from parents have you experienced, if any? About it, around
just as being GSA coordinator?
Right.
You know, I, for some reason, we don't tend to hear a lot from parents as a club. And I don't know why that is. We don't maybe necessarily put ourselves out there in the newsletter for the school or something like that. But I can say, just as a teacher, I've had back to school nights where, you know, I might have posters up announcing something for GSA because it's in my room, and a parent coming in and me overhearing him say something like, you know, oh, she's one of those, you know, the, just something really, really inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And, so then I think, well, okay, you know, there are going to be people out there, there are going to be parents out there that don't approve of me being an advocate for these kids, but this is my job and I'm passionate about it. It
certainly sounds like the kids are more willing to stand up than the parents, huh?
Yeah. I know some students, they aren't able to go to GSA because their parents won't allow them to. They don't approve. So parents can, I don't know how they heard about it, but parents can stop them from finding that a safe place.
That's tragic. I want to go back to the survey a little bit. What prompted you to do this survey, and what were some of the other things that you asked the staff?
So what prompted me to do the survey of the staff is we have the opportunity for the San Francisco GSA to come out once or twice a year and kind of help us look at goals and what are we working on. And in 2011, we did a student climate survey where we had them answer questions about, do you feel safe on campus? You know, do you ever hear slurs? How do you respond to slurs? But I felt like that really left out an important part of our campus, which is the staff, which is teachers, administrators, and then the classified staff, like the people in the cafeteria and the offices, right, and that kind of thing. Like, these are the people that are in the forefront of, if something does come to the office, whether a slur happens or somebody's being bullied, like, what, how are they actually feeling personally about those things? So I asked very similar questions, but I asked the staff members. And so the kind of interesting things that came out of the survey was that more people identified as not heterosexual than I was aware of. And it makes me curious, you know, it's kind of similar, like, to the students, why do you come out or not come out? Is it out of fear? Or is it what the parents are going to say? Who knows? And are they feeling supported? You know, do they feel like they can't be themselves at school? And then the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting is I asked if, you know, if you hear a slur in class, like, that's so gay, something like that, how do you respond? And every teacher that responded said, in some way on the spectrum, I respond, from being low-key about it, but I intervene, to I strongly intervene and make sure students know it's totally unacceptable. And I would be on that end of the range. But when I asked, how often do you hear students intervene when they hear a slur? So, you know, when you overhear it, you might address it, but in the time that's there, do you hear students say something? Only 16% of teachers said most or every time. So we could be working really hard on our front in the offices and in our classrooms, but there's still something about students not wanting to speak up that is problematic. And so where do we go with that?
So, Kaylee, does that sort of fit what your experience is? Do you see kids speaking up maybe out of earshot of teachers, or are they mostly silent?
They are mostly silent. I personally speak up, but usually the majority of the student body, they just turn their back or just laugh it off or just ignore it completely.
Why do you think that is? Is it because they don't know what to say?
Out of fear of, you know, being called that's so gay, or, you know, you're so gay, or just because it's become just something so normal in daily life that you forget. You forget it's, you know, it could be insulting to someone else, or it could be hurting someone else's feelings. Right. It's just become. So.
Well, I think too, like, one of the other things that we've done in the past, maybe 2 years ago, is put up safe place posters in all the classrooms and offices. And we came back to that this year and realized that over half of those were gone in a year and a half's time or 2 years' time. So we made more and put them up around campus. But if you have, just because you have posters up in a room, the varying degrees of how a teacher might intervene or an adult might intervene might have some impact on how students intervene or not, you know?
Absolutely.
So, there's no way to kind of affect 100% of classrooms.
Right. Well, I know that the experience for college students is very much the same. There's a national study that was released. 70% of first-year college students consider leaving their school, and these are college freshmen, because of bullying and harassment they experience. But it's really name-calling, and it's name-calling primarily in public spaces, including classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really something I think we've got to deal with and try to equip young people with what to say. And then back them up. And you were mentioning that the high school administration is really very firm about taking action against someone who says, you know, you're gay or that's so
we good. Are, yeah. For as long as I've been there, I definitely feel that support is there in the office.
That's great.
To the point where now it's probably been 6 or 7 years ago that a teacher followed through and did what she was supposed to, and the parents sued the school district for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we ended up being successful with that, but... I definitely feel support there.
So I know one of the things that Maria Carrillo does that I think is great in the last several years is the Martin Luther King event or the assembly or the act, I don't know what you call it, but you do an activity around that. And I know this year the GSA couldn't be involved directly, but talk about how does that event impact the campus and how did it impact the GSA?
It definitely impacts the student body quite big. I know some of the speeches were really powerful and it had a lot of good points. I know for the GSA personally, they had a video called Same Love by Macklemore, and it's basically, you know, straight on like, oh, this, you know, gay marriage is not allowed and freedom to wear equal. And looking at around the assembly, there was crying and there was like, this is unfair. And there was definitely a lot of emotion and definitely like, you know, it was something that everyone saw, like, this is wrong. So it definitely impacted really big there.
Wow. That's great. That's great. So you mentioned Day of Silence coming up. What else is happening this spring that the GSA is going to be involved in that you're looking forward to?
Well, we're hoping to get a big group of us to go to Hella Gay Prom, which is a positive images event. Safe place to go for LGBT couples.
Good. And something about Pride, maybe a Pride Parade March?
Oh, yeah,
the Greenville Pride Parade or the San Francisco.
Very good.
Definitely want to go there.
Well, believe it or not, we're already out of time. I mean, it flies by. And I really want to thank you both for all the work that you're doing at Maria Carrillo. I'm really impressed with what's going on at that school. And parents and kids alike should be really pleased to have you both there doing such great work.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being on the show. Well, that brings us to the end of this first edition of Outbeat News in Depth. My thanks to all of our guests tonight, Joshana Wally, Derek Nance, and the incredible students and staff from Maria Carrillo's Gay Straight Alliance. Remember, you can stay connected and informed all week long by following Outbeat News on our Facebook page and via Twitter. Listen and download our shows from iTunes or from our website, where you'll always find the latest LGBT news from here in the North Bay and beyond, www.outbeatnews.com. Tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Radio and Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. That's at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from WACOBB.net. With over 10,000 members, WACOBB.net is a bulletin board for the North Bay progressive community, including a business directory featuring testimonials from our trusted business community. Information to list your business or find a service provider is available at WACOBB.net. That's WACOBB.net. Connecting conscious community. You're listening to KRCB-FM Windsor Santa Rosa on the air at 91.1 and 90.9 FM. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.